It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as always, live and in color. You can tell if you stare at your radio dial in the right place. And we will be here, I'm going to announce right now, over the holiday weekend next Saturday, which is the Labor Day weekend, which means a bunch of things. It's sort of the unofficial end of summer, sort of the official end or beginning of the school year. But it's also when the political season truly starts.
Yay.
And you might have just been breathing a sigh of relief because the conventions were over. Ooh, just wait.
Man, the commercials alone are enough to drive you crazy.
I'm going to talk a little bit about one of them today, one of the most misleading things that I've heard in a long, long time. But, you know, it's not the topic that we like. But when it hits you in the pocketbook, and the one I'm going to talk about today hits you all directly in the pocketbook, when it becomes personal finance, then we've got to talk about it because people you vote for can have a very, very direct impact on your future. And I've got to get another one for next week, too.
I mean, it's really only important if you ever want to retire with money.
Yeah. And not become a ward of the state or anything like that. So we'll get to all that. But meanwhile, all the regulars, welcome back. Thanks for always being here. We of course, do the show because you are there. And if you're new to the show, whether you found it by accident or on purpose, try to listen for the whole hour, and we promise you you'll learn something. And what you'll learn is undoubtedly somewhat what we want to tell you. But what makes live radio, is because you want to talk about something else, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. We always put callers right first. We'll interrupt 99.9% of what we're talking about to put a caller on air. And don't worry if you think the question is stupid or anything like that. It's not. I promise you, if there's something you don't know, there are other people that don't know it. And if you've got a personal situation that you would like some kind of steering advice on, we are able to do that too. If you are, if you want to ask us questions and you're reluctant to go on the radio, you know, only about 4 or 5% of people listening will ever call a show, which is really too bad because we honestly don't bite much or hard. But you, you can also inquire through our website, through our email, info@vanweefinancial.com. And while you're there, look around the website, vanweefinancial.com. Adam has put it all together and dressed it up and improved it over time, and we get a lot of good compliments on it. So there are things to learn on there. You can always listen to the show if you miss one. We have a way of, down in the bottom, we have a way of linking to past shows and all of that. So use it. But we prefer calls because that's what makes radio interesting. All right. Pretty hard to get either of us out of a good mood this week because it was another bang-up week in the market, and I would say the biggest news of the week is that all the red ink for the year has now disappeared.
It is gone. Well, that's not entirely true.
No, but
the major indices. If you're looking at the three major indices, that is correct, but there are still some soft spots out there, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the I said last week that if you look back through history, when you see runs like we've seen recently, people start to get scared. We're getting calls. People are scared. The market's so high, meaning who knows what that means. There's a lot of different definitions of high. But during historically in these situations, what happens in 1 month, what happens in 6 months, it continues to do well. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense because you would think that just naturally there'd be a pullback, but no. The under these situations historically, markets have had better than average returns on both a 1 and 6 month basis, and it's the overwhelming majority of the time.
Huge majority.
Not just 51% of the time, more like 85 to 95% of the time.
Yeah, in fact you would call the other ones the exceptions.
Yeah, it's true. So if you're scared, I understand, but don't do anything foolish. That is my advice because it is if you're playing the odds, if you're and that's really historic data is all we have to go by, you would think that the market will go up again. And I find it hard to believe as well, but the data is what it is. So returns this week were nothing short of spectacular. The Dow lagged the other indexes, and it only, quote unquote, only went up 2.6%. The S&P gained 3.3% and the NASDAQ 3.4%. For August, the S&P is up over 7%. NASDAQ and Dow are up over 8%. All three are now positive for the year, as we mentioned. Dow just broke that barrier this week, and the NASDAQ is now up over 30% for the year. Unbelievable.
Given the fact that it was down, what, did it make 30 on the way down?
I don't remember, either.
It was way down before April 1 hit.
It was honestly tough to find a negative number this week, so yeah. I'll just review real quick the things that didn't go up. Utilities were weak. They lost 0.6%. Bond prices fell. The 20-year Treasury lost over 3%. The total bond market lost about 0.5%. That's it. Everything else was positive that we track. Small caps, mid caps, large caps, every other sector of the S&P, every other country that we follow, every commodity we follow, all positive. The biggest winners were financials, technology, communication services, Brazil, and natural gas. All of those gained more than 4%. And a good week, though, but not necessarily a good year for all of those things.
No, there that's the truth.
Many segments of the market that are down double digits for the year, including the energy sector, down 37%, small cap value down 17%, Brazil down 34%, and oil down 70%. And those are just some of the highlights. There's still a lot that hasn't caught up to its pre-COVID highs. So definitely keep an eye, because right now the market is, there's some clear winners and there's some clear losers. So you either hopefully you've been in with the clear, betting on the clear winners. And if not, maybe it's time to take a look at some of those losers and see what has the best chance of turning around, because that's could be where the most potential is.
We talked about financials last week, and
yep.
Financials came through big time this
they
week.
They did. We just had that conversation with a few clients over the yep. last month, and glad that we stuck with it. There was a ton of economic data this week as well. 34 data points were released. Of that, two-thirds of those came in better than expected or better than the prior month. Most of the bad news came early in the week, and then from Wednesday on, it was a flurry of good news. One area that wasn't a surprise, where we saw a lot of good news, was in housing. There were three housing price indicators that came out on Monday, but only one of them rose more than expected. However, the other two showed home prices are rising, more modest pace than what was expected. I'm pretty sure that you're going to continue to see those climb at a fairly rapid rate based on what's happening right now. I don't think that we're in any danger of house prices leveling off in the short run.
No.
There's just too much demand. Rates are incredibly low. Prices are, and we're seeing the price increases locally for sure. The only place this may not be true is in large cities. Think New York City and San Francisco.
Downtown areas.
Yeah. New home sales topped expectations in a major way, coming in at 901,000 versus 790,000 expected. Pending home sales beat expectations, up almost 6% from a month ago. And local company Black Knight released their preliminary look at mortgage delinquency rates. And for July, it improved, actually, down to 6.9% from 7.6%.
Good.
Still the highest it's been since 2013, though.
Yeah. Still, I like the trend line going that way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, when we do get this country completely open and rolling the way it was, you're going to go back to seeing those numbers at more tolerable levels. You're always going to have some delinquencies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. It never goes away 100%. Yeah.
Somebody falls on hard times. You could see it this week. We got a bunch more economic data to talk about. We got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. And you can call Ken at a number that I just inadvertently erased this morning.
Oh, whoops. I can look it up for you.
You got 7888, and I can't remember the first
three. Yeah, I don't either.
Sorry, Ken. I'll get that fixed for next week. I get to see him this week anyway, so he'll have a little chance to razz me about it.
Anyway. It's 6367888.
Yeah, I had it right in my head anyway, but I usually keep it right in front of me because, hey, I'm getting old. Can't trust this stuff. Anyway, Warren Buffett, through his I don't even know what you want to call it, his mega company, Berkshire Hathaway, owns about $130 billion worth of Apple. It's about a quarter. you can roughly divide his holdings into four parts, and one part alone is Apple.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? What percentage of Apple does he own? 1, 10, 50, whatever. So that's it. And I will take it, you know, within reason, plus or minus one or so, something like that. So you can do some figuring if you want to, or you can just guess if you want to, either way. All right, there were a lot more data points and that kind of thing, good news everywhere you look this week, so we should wrap up. Excuse me, some more of this stuff?
Yeah, the job numbers have struggled a bit lately. That's one area that isn't improving at the rate that it was improving right. A few weeks ago. Both continuing and initial jobless claims were better than last week, but were slightly higher than expected. Just over 1 million people lost their jobs this week, but the total number of unemployed people dropped from 14.8 million to 14.5 million. So that means we're still gaining more jobs than we're losing.
I found it kind of remarkable that it actually went down, since the inaction in Congress is holding back any more of the PPP and so on, and more companies are just throwing out their hands, giving up, and saying we're not going to reopen.
Yeah, it's true. We're seeing it locally now even more. Several businesses around my area have closed for good.
Yeah, and they wouldn't have had to do that.
No, it's really, really unfortunate, and I can't even imagine what the situation looks like in states that haven't reopened to the degree Florida has.
Yep.
So California, I guess New York is moving along now, but it's not pretty. And it's unnecessary for us to be killing all these businesses.
The liberals not allowing Donald Trump to make so much as a tiny little victory when it really isn't about him.
No.
It's about American small business owners, where most of the job creation comes from, and now it's where most of the job losses are going to come from for a while, because they can't stay open because they're not allowed to.
Yep, it's really, really disheartening, but hopefully we can get it turned around quickly here. As far as there was a lot of other data, a ton of other data, really. Manufacturing looked good. Is there anything you wanted to hit specifically out of that?
I just don't think we can say enough about the housing market right now.
It's crazy.
It is absolutely nuts. And when you think about it, that may be a little bit related too.
To
the virus and all that. Because how many people have discovered that not only have they been working from home, but they can, and over 50% say they like it. So I think people are paying a little bit more attention to their own situations at home. This is excellent news for the job market.
Yeah, it's
for the housing market.
Yeah, it's definitely related to that. I'm just wondering if that's a trend that's going to stick with us, because I think that as time goes on and companies start to look at their productivity numbers for work at home versus work in the office, I think we're going to start to see some fatigue from working at home. And I think we will go back to offices more than what they are predicting today.
Well, time will tell, won't
it? Yep, I agree. I want to talk a little bit about the COVID numbers as well, because they're quite good in general.
You won't hear this on television.
No, definitely not. But every major indicator made multi-month lows this week. So new cases, positive test rates, deaths, and hospitalization rates are all the lowest they've been in multiple months. And the number of tests are also declining, which concerns a lot of people, but it really shouldn't. Because if less people are exposed, then less people go to get tested. That's actually a positive sign for what's happening. But the fact that less people are testing and positivity rates and hospitalizations are going down is a trend that we should be rooting for, not rooting against or being worried about. So, and the ironic thing is, it wasn't a month or two ago when people were saying, well, why can't we just be more like Europe? Well, you better watch out how when you say these kind of things, because right now, the only major continent that's seeing a huge increase, a spike in coronavirus cases, is Europe. And it's France and Spain are having some pretty serious spikes. So they did manage to lock down and I guess flatten the curve is the right way to say it. But now that they're starting to reopen, they are seeing some pretty major upticks. So It's a delicate balance between the lockdowns and the and seeing major spikes. But as long as your hospitals aren't overwhelmed, that really should be the goal.
I think that has a lot to do with where and when it peaked country by country. Because once you get past your peak, and if you're doing anything right, it starts to wane. And I think they were maybe just a little behind us. They're a little more remote, perhaps.
I mean, Spain saw a pretty huge spike at the beginning.
They did, yeah.
But then they locked down, and it kind of went away. So this thing is so hard to figure out. There's no rhyme or reason to it, it seems like. Other good news is that despite what you hear from our idiotic politicians, Americans are actually being responsible about the virus. According to YouGov, a poll done by then, Americans now self-report that 81% of us are wearing masks in public, which is on par with many Asian countries who are used to wearing masks all the time. In fact, there's only a handful of Asian nations that are above us in that metric, and it's like 82-83%. So we are right there with people who are used to this and conditioned to wearing masks all the time. So good for us, and I wish the politicians would just stop making us sound like we're not doing what we need to do, because we are.
Yeah, well, I think we ought to have a national mandate where you get thrown in jail if you don't. Oh, wait, no, that's another story.
Guess who has the lowest masking rate in the world? Europe.
Yeah?
Europe. It's Europe. And
I'm not surprised. The liberal bastion of the world.
Exactly. So,
All right, a couple more things that are happening. The Fed met. They did their Jackson Hole thing, and they rolled over. It's plain and simple.
Yeah, they did.
The gutless wonders at the Fed, and don't get me started because you'll never hear the end of it. But anyway, the gutless wonders went out there and said, well, we have to do something because we don't have enough inflation. Well, I have a suggestion for them. Why don't you report the real inflation number and keep your mouth shut? Because the real inflation number, as everyone in my earshot right now will tell you, is massive compared to the virtually nothing that they're reporting to us day to day. So they decided, well, this economy needs help, and we're lying about the inflation rate. What can we do? So they invented a new way to measure inflation. Like they haven't had a new way already. They don't use the consumer price index that we use. They have their own lying method of developing their number. I can't remember what they call it because I get so irritated. But it plays down the rate of inflation from even the consumer price index, which is a real joke compared to the normal. But now, instead of saying, well, it is at this spot right now, we're going to now look at history and say, we're looking for a long-term average inflation rate of about 2%. Well, if they've been reporting it down, that means they're going to allow it to rise well above 2% without doing anything. That's normally what they do. They raise interest rates at that point, and they're not going to do it. So what do investors know right now? We know one thing. There aren't going to be interest rate changes coming up. I guess you could kind of say the good news is I think ZIRP is off the table. Or not ZIRP. Yeah, ZIRP. Zero. Not. What a negative. NERP.
Yeah.
Negative interest rate policy, NERP.
I thought he was actually pretty clear that he was not going to do that.
Even going into this meeting, he was pretty clear about that.
I was not worried about that personally.
No, I think the ZIRP, the zeros, are going to be not only where we're at now, but where we'll be for at least another year or two.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he
made it pretty clear that he is in no rush to raise rates. And that's why the market responded like it did this week.
Yeah, although it means a very bad scenario for some of the society. Elderly people, people who aren't big risk takers, people living on fixed incomes. It used to be you could go out and buy some laddered CDs, that sort of thing, and you could get 4%, 5%, 6%, and people were living off it. Well, now you can get 0.01 to 0.03%. You can't live off of it. And for the last several years, that's been forcing older people to take more risk by going into dividend-paying equities and that sort of thing than they would normally take. Well, this is not going to end. And Adams worked very hard to find some alternatives to CDs made up of less risky assets that hopefully will bump you up to 2 or 3%, which is at least positive.
Still pretty pathetic.
Still pathetic. I agree. So that is a big deal. Because what the Fed said this time, you can count on this one being true. They're not going anywhere for a long, long time. And I say that for the very simple reason that Trump loves that policy. And so does the stock market. So
the stock market definitely loves it. I am not a fan.
Good. No, and I'm going to talk more about that in the second half of the show. There are a couple stock splits coming up over the weekend. When Apple owns opens up on Monday. There will be 4 shares for every 1 today. And when Tesla opens up, there will be 5 for every share today. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average has replaced 3 stocks with 3 others. Out are Exxon, Pfizer, and RTX, Raytheon, and in are Salesforce, Amgen, and Honeywell. What that means to me, not very much. But no. It means to some people think those stocks will start selling a lot higher. Time will tell. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm going to have to disclaim the disclaimer because we've had a little computer problem.
Yeah, some technical things today.
It's okay, though, because the law says we have to run it once
an
hour.
And we did.
And we did that. We usually run at the bottom, too, because we would like to be right out in the forefront of honesty and full disclosure here. Transparency is everything. So, again, for those of you who never listened to it, it just says that anything we say we think will be the truth, but there's nothing we do that constitutes personal investment advice. And if you want to get that, you're going to have to come to the office and get it from us, which still won't cost you anything. You just can't do it Saturday morning.
No.
How's that for easy?
Yeah, we won't be there.
No. Yeah, you can knock on the door and sit on the doorstep. It's okay. Trivia question still out there. Warren Buffett and his company own about $130 billion worth of Apple. What percentage of Apple's worth does he actually own? Whole number. You rounded a whole number. All right. Who's heard of the payroll tax deferral? Probably a lot of you have. Trump put forth a proposal. I don't know. I first heard about it maybe a month or 6 weeks ago, where one of the economic stimulus things that he put forth was he wanted to cut the payroll tax for a period of time. And what he's talking about now, I believe, is from right now until the end of the year. When we first heard that, Adam and I talked about it, and we came on the show, and we started talking about it, and we didn't like it. But first, good morning, George.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
About 4 or 5 months ago, I have a variable annuity with Vanguard,
mm-hmm.
and I can, you know, go in and out on it, various funds that are available.
Right.
And about 4 or 5 months ago, I got scared and went to money market, and I've got quite a bit of money in this money market. Do you have any suggestions of I want to get back in the market, but I don't know where to go.
What funds are you thinking about using to get back in the market?
Growth fund.
Okay. Growth has been hot lately. Value has not. I'm kind of leaning toward maybe value picking up some steam, but I like to split them up anyway because I'm just not the big risk taker.
No. Has done well in this group of funds.
Mm-hmm. Not surprised. When do you need the money?
I don't.
Okay. And who are you investing for? Are you thinking you're going to die with this as a...
My children,
yeah,
really.
Okay, so you're really investing for your kids. How old are they?
They are all in their 50s.
All right. Since your intention of the money is to give it to people currently in their 50s, then you should be investing as if you were in your 50s, which means that you are much closer to what I would recommend saying going into the growth fund than it would be if you were asking about money that you needed for yourself. I would not suggest taking not nearly that much risk, we'll say. So I would also not put it in one fund.
No. And definitely don't only go into growth. You want to spread that around into growth and value, because despite growth being the hottest thing out there for several years now, you never know when that's going to switch. But I can guarantee you it will switch.
Yes, it will eventually. So I think some kind of a diversification, which I would say to anybody on Brittany or any occasion, I would go with. Now Adam, you can chime in. I'd first figure out what your stock bond allocation should be. Fair enough?
Yeah,
I think the bonds can be pretty short. short term and
yes.
and a smallish percentage.
Yeah, I would stay away from
How about the total stock market index?
Yeah, we love that one.
That is sort of the core holding of all of our portfolios. Yeah. So every
Absolutely
single client that we have owns some form of the total stock market.
I've got that. That's available.
Yep, and that's and Vanguard has a really good one called BTI yeah. In the ETF, and then they I believe they also have a mutual fund that covers it.
Yeah, well, I would think, based on the circumstances where we're actually talking to some 50-year-olds, essentially through George, what do you think, 50%?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that you have about on average about a 10-year time horizon in your 50s, roughly, because
yeah.
if you put 65 to 67 as retirement date and you're mm-hmm. in your 50s, that's about right. So you can afford to take some risk because it's more than 5 years, but you don't want to overload yourself with risk just in case the market takes another dive.
Yeah. So what would you surround that 50% core with?
The 50% stock.
If we did the total stock, if it 50% of the whole thing, if we put it into the total market index, we got 50% left.
Yep. So then I would look at a first of all, I would take a good portion of it and put it in a good diversified bond fund. Try and keep your duration short. Don't go long right now because the prospects for long-term bonds right now, I think, are pretty poor, especially after the Fed meeting.
How about corporate bond?
Yes, that should be a portion of it.
Yep.
But also some government debt. A diversified bond fund that holds everything would be ideal.
Yep. And there are probably some at Vanguard. They're pretty good at that kind of thing. But I would look for a total bond market index or something like that that includes government, corporate, and all else.
Okay.
20-25%?
I'd go 25.
Okay. And that leaves 25%. And Adam may disagree with me on this, but I would leave 10% in cash.
I don't disagree with that, but I would also look at some international as well.
Yep.
I'm pretty bullish on
the rest of
the world, more than I have been in the last 5 years, for sure. So Vanguard has VXUS, and that's all the international markets. It's all the world markets except for the U.S., and that's a pretty good fund. So you could put some in there.
And then how about pure technology, too, if you want to concentrate some of your...
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking of, just because tech is so hot. That's one that you might want to go in short term.
I don't have one available.
Oh, you don't? I'm surprised. So, okay.
Yeah, I am, too.
With that being said, Vanguard has a great REIT as well.
Yeah, true.
VNQ. Do you have access to that?
Yes.
Okay. I would go 5% in that, and then maybe 5% commodities, something like that.
Yeah, because you want to have a little risk buoyancy. You know, every commodity was up this past week. There's interest out there, and there's demand out there. All right, so you got 50% total market, 10% in cash, and 25% in a well-diversified, low-duration bond index, 5% in REITs and 5% in international. Did that add up to 100?
It's close.
I'm not sure. It's something like that. You know, the actual percent right down to the tenth of a point is nothing. But I think that gives you the kind of thinking that we do when we have somebody in there who's not a 20-something or a 30-something, where we would bump that risk up even higher. I probably wouldn't even have bonds in there right now for a young kid.
No.
But then for a 70 or 80-year-old, we wouldn't have nearly that much equity risk.
Right.
But since you're dealing with people that have 10 or 15 years left, the beneficiaries, I think that's a really nice long, it should be able to go 5 or 10 years with a kind of like that.
And in the total market fund, I don't know if I would just pick a day and put all 50% in. I would dollar cost average over a series of weeks or months, even.
Just 10% on pick a day of the month, the 5th or whatever. And then every month on that day, buy 10% until you're filled up with your 50% total market.
All right. It sounds mighty good. I appreciate your help with that. It's very helpful.
Well, thank you very much. And it's such a wonderful question, and I'm glad I got to talk about who you're investing for, because every week I think I'm going to get into this topic. The age you are doesn't always spell out the correct risk level that you want to be, because a lot of people just flat out don't need the money, and you're a classic example. And I'm really happy that you understood that and are willing to take on a little more. So that's where we are. Do you want to take a shot at the trivia question?
What was the question again?
What percentage of Apple does Berkshire Hathaway own?
2%.
Good guess, but too low.
Too low.
Yeah. He's got a chunk of it. He's got a chunk of everything, I think.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Okay, thank you very much.
Sure, we appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Weekend. That's what happens when you have more money than God.
Exactly. And I remember when he was getting into Apple, and he was buying, and he was buying, and he was buying, and I was shaking my head, just thinking, you know, this is too good to be true. Yeah, I don't know what the man is thinking. As usual, you give Warren Buffett enough time, and he'll prove you wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He sold the airlines, and for a long time, it looked like he was crazy then. And right now, I got to congratulate him. I think he's doing just fine without them. This is not coming back. That industry is not coming back with the pace that I might have thought before. So he's been around a long time, and he's watched, and he's listened, and he's thought, and he's probably lost a lot of money, too, but he's sure made a bundle of it. Got to give him credit. Don't have to like him. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, and I didn't erase their phone number. You can call Troy at 904-662-9794 and let Troy do it. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've got a guess.
Well,
please.
Take it, please.
5%.
You know what? I told Adam that we're going to do this plus or minus one, and since he owns 6%, that makes you the winner.
Well, not too bad a guess.
Not too bad. 6% of a $2 trillion. Dollar company.
The gentleman's filthy rich.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am so just average Joe. I would be absolutely happy to only have 1%.
I could live on that.
Yeah. I wish I was at least a cousin or something.
Yeah, like Jimmy.
Although, didn't he pledge most of his wealth to charity?
Yeah. Yeah, well, he gives gigantic chunks of it to the Gates Foundation so that Bill Gates can waste it.
God laughs.
What can I
say? Can I make a political comment?
Absolutely.
Kind of off the wall. A certain party hadn't done the seniors too well.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
I know people that were not even employed that filed for unemployment and got it.
Oh, God.
They need to vet some of this stuff.
You know what? The old expression goes, what could possibly go wrong when you're throwing around a bunch of money, right?
Well, sad I voted for him.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but not much you can do. All right, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get your address.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, and congratulations. A very fine guess.
Yep.
Can you imagine that?
It's an amount of money I can't really picture.
It's actually just a tad more than six, but the closest was six, and we did it plus or minus one. It's going to be, I think, 1 billion shares, if I got my numbers right. Come Monday, when they open on Monday, you're going to have four for every share you've got now, and I think it's going to go up to about 1 billion shares that he owns. That's a big number in itself. Yeah, 1 billion shares at $1 a piece would be kind of a nice holding.
And also, if you own Apple and you log into your account this weekend and it looks really screwy on the numbers, there's a reason for that.
A friend of mine
sent me a text with a screenshot of his Apple shares, and it shows his unrealized gain or loss as about 90% of his current holdings. And that's really just because of the stock split. It'll correct next week. So don't freak out if you own Apple or Tesla and your account looks a little screwy this weekend.
No, that reminds me, we're going into the fall, and the fall is when the mutual funds do their payments. And there are some times when distributions from mutual funds will happen on a Friday.
Yep.
So if you look at your account on Saturday morning, you're going to say, oh, my God, my mutual fund went down 8% or something like that overnight. What was wrong? And all it did was pay out 8%, and it hasn't been repurchased yet because they don't have the share price calculated. So Monday, that dividend, if you're reinvesting, goes back into it, and then all of a sudden your total account value – it goes right back where it was, but you see your shares and there are more of them. Oh, and by the way, unless it's in an IRA, you owe the government some taxes on that. That's a thing we'll get into a little bit later. The whole difference between exchange-traded funds and mutual funds is, from a taxation standpoint, you need to be a little careful with those things.
If you do. And some, over the last couple of years, some mutual funds have paid out huge capital gains. And if you own them in a brokerage account, you're definitely going to generate some taxable.
Oh, and the worst thing that happens is when they do that early in the year, and the year starts out and it's just going gangbusters and they're taking profits and buying things that are going up, and they wind up with huge internal capital gains, and then things start to go sour in the market. And what happens is that people start selling their shares. And when the divestitures start to happen, the mutual fund company, maybe we'll talk about it today, the mutual fund company has an obligation by law due to their structure that when you want to sell your particular shares, first off, let's ask the most fundamental question of all. When you buy shares of a mutual fund, who do you buy them from?
The mutual fund company.
Exactly. I can't buy them from you.
No.
You have to sell them back to the mutual fund company, and I have to buy them from them. So since you can't do that, the obligation of the mutual fund company is that if I buy, they have to deliver the next day, and if I sell, they have to send me money overnight. But what happens in a time where divestitures are outpacing the purchases, they have to start selling their own assets, whether they want to or not, internally, so that that night, by the time it all settles down, they owe a bunch of cash to a bunch of people. They got to have it. Well, what that causes is that some of the assets that they're selling come up against a lot of selling pressure, whereas the average guy off the street, if he wants to sell that same asset, let's say somebody was holding 100 shares of, oh, I don't care, Honeywell, and he sold the 100 shares of Honeywell, well, that 100 shares might be sold to Adam if I have them. That's a stock exchange. It's an exchange between two individuals who buy and sell, and you don't know who it's going to be, but the next person in line to buy 100 shares gets my 100 shares as soon as I let it go. Now, that doesn't work with a mutual fund company. So if they are forced to liquidate their assets, and one of the things they peg to keep things balanced might be Honeywell, they might have to sell 10,000 or 100,000 or whatever shares of Honeywell, even though Honeywell might be on the way up or it's nice and steady and not really causing a problem. That pressure is going to be felt in the stock exchange by virtue of the mutual fund company doing the selling. You know, that causes the whole downward pressure on Honeywell in this case, and it makes for some disruption in the market, especially during bad times. But back to the individual. The individual who owns the shares of that mutual fund, the people who haven't sold them, you're going to get out to January 1, and you're going to find out that you got a distribution, usually in November or December, of all of the profits from trading for the year. And that's all taxable unless you've got it in a tax-deferred retirement account. So you might have a mutual fund that's worth 10% less than you paid for it, but you might also have an 8 or 9 or 10% tax penalty or a tax burden, not a penalty, because of the nature of the mutual fund. So let's say that I were the mutual fund investor and that hit me. Well, I could have, it's called a large cap growth fund, better yet, a large cap value fund because they pay a lot of dividends. So let's say I owned that and Adam owned a very similar exchange traded fund, large cap value. And it paid similarly in dividends throughout the year. And if anybody sells one, it goes from person A to person B. So there's no pressure on the internal assets. So if it owned, let's say it was 5% Honeywell, and somebody sells a million shares of it, how many shares of Honeywell just sold? None. What sold was the ETF, the exchange-traded fund, which sold from my million, was purchased by whoever and how many others in the market, but no actual shares of Honeywell took place, or trades took place. So there's no pressure on the stock value. So you could look at it one way. Exchange-traded funds prevent you personally, because they're not forced to pay out. They get to the end of the year, and they do not have had to distribute the capital gains and dividends, whereas the mutual fund companies have had to pay them out. So you get no tax burden whatsoever on the shares of whatever ETF that you have sold. The market is not disrupted because those actual shares of Honeywell have not traded, and everybody is better off. So strangely enough, the mutual fund company, which started the whole concept, started back in the late 1800s, and it grew and it grew and it grew because there were no other ways of small investors getting into the market. So the mutual fund companies actually created the interest in the stock market, and thereby, over time, they were responsible for the rampant growth of the stock market itself, and as of the worth of people and so on. They played their role and they did it well. But we still use some of them, but long about, I think when I got into this business in 01, and there were already some exchange-traded funds in the arena, and I started learning about them and using some of them. It seemed like there was a lot of upside and not much downside to using the exchange-traded funds. Well, I must have been right, because there were about 100 back then, and now there are thousands of them. You can find an exchange-traded fund that does almost anything, and better yet now, the cost of buying and selling them at most of the big houses now has gone to zero. So all in all, I mean, this is a topic we can talk about forever. But if you're not familiar with exchange-traded funds, look them up, and we'll talk about it over the next few weeks because of the whole tax implication. Anyway, just a little background from lots of years of doing this and watching it, and people seem to agree because, man, they get popular, whereas mutual funds are going down. All right, thanks for listening today. We'll be back next week, even though it's a holiday. We'll be right here. Don't go anywhere. This is the Ben Wheat Financial Hour.